One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What is going on, y'all? And thank y'all again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting over here, powering through his ice water with, well, there's not ice in his veins. It's just Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I do have my ice water right here. Drink H2O, folks. It's really good for you. Everybody could use more of it. I don't even know what particular brand this is today. I think it's pretty generic. I think it's like Ozarka, which is common here in Texas.
Yeah.
I know when I go up north to visit family, like in New Jersey, you can't really find Ozarka. It's like different brands, and depends on where you're at. Like when we went to California, it was something totally different too.
You just got to find
it. But down here in Texas, Ozarka is very popular. It's like probably the go-to water. Like if there's thousands of waters.
Well, your go-to water away from your tap. Do you not drink tap water? Because I've seen you.
I drink it sometimes, but most of the time, no. I have a delivery service that brings Ozarka to my house. We have a... and then, of course, every day I go to the gas station, I stop. I always come home with waters, especially if I can see a new brand. Yeah. Absolutely. I try almost all of them. And I will say 98% of them taste exactly like the other one.
Just like water.
Just like water. Tastes but there, like every water. Once in a while, there are some outliers. I do remember, as a kid, I remember when a friend of ours, they always had Evian water. And I was like, as I grew up in the country, we had a water well. We never had bottled water. I used to always be like, man, this stuff's from the French Alps.
I remember the same thing. My aunt and uncle had that. My cousin.
You know what I'm saying? You'd be like, man, this is exotic. This is from France.
100%.
Right? I feel high society when I'm drinking this water.
For real. For real.
I've been continuing my horror-based movie watching thanks to Luke. He is forcing me to watch all kinds of new movies.
Very nice. Very nice.
I'm not enjoying all of them, but I am trying to be a good father, so I'm pretending that I
like them. Well, that's a first.
I know. I'm trying to turn over a new leaf. What's the one we just watched? I watched the new version of The Candyman.
Oh, how was
I remember
that?
The old one.
The old one scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, I was going to say, this one was not very, it wasn't bad. I did not mind it. I liked it way better than Terrifier 3. Terrifier 3 is like, you've seen A House of 1,000 Corpses, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's like so wild that you like your brain, you can't wrap around what's going on.
Well, you remember one of the old Texas Chainsaw Massacre remakes is one that's got, I think, Matthew McConaughey's in it.
See, back I never
when he
saw
was
that.
Super young. And that's another one of those ones that's just complete and total madness. So with Houses of 1,000 Corpses made me think of that. So you telling me, then I'm completely
It's crazy,
out.
But I'm in the wrong because it is killing. It's like one of the top movies in America right now. It's like doing better than The Joker.
So my wife and I watched the remake of Salem's Lot from the miniseries to the movie.
Oh, I saw that on HBO.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched it. I just saw it popped up. It was good?
I've not watched a film like that in a long time.
Was it a standalone or is it a series?
No, it's a standalone.
Oh, okay.
I enjoyed it. I really did.
I remember the old one because my dad used to always, the master wants you. Remember when he comes into the kitchen at night and slams the people's heads together?
Well, you can also watch the old one.
Oh, you
it's
can?
On there too, so I'm going to watch it later.
I bet it doesn't stand up, but when you're 8 years old, it sure does.
It scares the hell out of you. And I'll tell you something else that'll scare the hell out of you. Kyle, if you're walking out to your stand, you're going for a stroll, the last thing you want to run into is a snarling, white, monstrous, pig-faced dog.
Well, that is one of many things
That's
I would not like to run into.
Things.
Please tell me more.
This is from my brother Lon, sent this over. There was a snarling, white, monstrous, pig-faced dog encountered in the Missouri woods in Missouri, y'all. Get a load of this. It said, I recently attended my high school reunion and chatted with my old neighbor and best friend, Ash. She said, do you remember that pig-faced monster we saw? and I looked at her with shock as the horrible memory flooded back. I must have been so terrified that I blocked it out, but yes, I remember. We used to live on a secluded dirt road. Well, in the middle of a 40-acre plot anyway from the road. Our property joined a huge state park at the back, 25 miles from the nearest town in Missouri. We were about 16, so around 2003. We were babysitting our younger siblings, so it was us and four younger ones. Our parents were out for the night. Obviously, we were no strangers to the woods. We knew the whole property well and would even walk the 2 miles between our houses. Free-range kids. I remember those days.
And I miss those
good
days.
Good times. So it was way past dark, but we have a pole light by our house. It's summer, so it feels great outside. We're all playing tag or hide-and-seek, just running around. I ran around the corner of my house, and I saw something white, like a flash, run behind the propane tank, then the well house. Our backyard was clear beside the small well house and propane tank. The woods are probably only 150 yards away, so not a lot of places for an animal to hide. Ash saw it too. The kids are still playing, and we thought it was just a stray dog, even though this thing was crazy fast, way faster than a dog. Up until that point, we had no reason to fear anything in the woods. We didn't have large predators, so we were like, oh, poor dog, let's check it out. So we sprint over around the well house and see a crouched white thing. I remember its hands were long-fingered hands. It was matted and dirty and smelled like death. My mind couldn't quite even comprehend its face, but it had a long kind of upturned nose and no hair on its face, like a snarling dog pig. I don't really remember the eyes, but I think they were black and yellow. All I know is that they looked evil and inspired fear I hadn't known. I can imagine. Did you? That's one of those ones, and they always tell you, like, the, you know, some people say you don't feel anything. Yeah. Right? And then some are shot, and then some you look at. Also, too, they must have been awful close. You run around and there it is. You're right on top of it. It says, at that moment, we screamed and ran, and the thing dashed off into the woods as I looked over my shoulder. The kids hear us scream and know something's wrong. We scream at them to get in the house, and we lock the doors. I couldn't keep my eyes off the back windows. Like, I didn't want to see it, but I had kids to protect, so I felt like I needed to know where it was. So we were just scared, pumped with adrenaline, and couldn't even speak about it. We got the kids calmed down and to bed finally, and I talked with Ash, and she saw the same thing I did. My parents got home, and we broke down freaking out, crying, pointing at the well house. My stepdad even went out there with a gun. We were so adamant. They told us it was probably a feral hog, and we were just tired or something. We didn't tell anyone at school and never brought it up again. Now, after the reunion, I asked my brother, who's 6 years younger than me, if he remembered that night we saw a monster at Mom's old house. He said no, and I started talking about how I forgot about it until Ash brought it up, and about how we saw something run behind the well house. He interrupts me and asks, was it white? I say, yeah. He asks, did it have a face like a weird dog? And I nod. And his eyes get big, and he basically starts yelling, oh my God, I saw that thing down the road from there a few years ago, and freaking out, visible goosebumps on his arms. He says he was driving the dirt road with his girlfriend at the time, hauling ass like always, but on really rocky patches, he would hit the brakes and drive slow over the rocks. He saw something in his headlights standing about 10 feet from the ditch, so still that he thought someone had put a weird statue out there. But its eyes followed him, and its face was sweaty. It was white, but muddy. It had a dog face and long-fingered hands, and stood on two legs at least 6 feet tall. Its eyes followed him as it passed it, and he looked into the rearview mirror and saw it dash away into the trees. He asked his girlfriend if she saw it, and she just nodded. They never spoke of it again, and he never told anybody. He said he kind of blocked it out until I brought up the monster at Mom's place. I stopped playing in the woods after that day in 2003 and started doing sports and teenage things. Ash stopped walking to my house and we grew apart. Now my brother and I are creeped out and I need to call my mom S.
Wow.
So a whole family.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That has had some sort of interaction. What could it be? I've not heard anything even described remotely close to that.
I haven't either, but when you started the story, I started thinking, well, could it be somebody's dog or something? Like, you know, some dogs' faces are kind of pig-like looking. But when you start getting into more details and you're like, well, that clearly isn't a dog. I don't know.
When they start, when the brother's like, this thing was standing about 6 foot tall on two legs.
Yeah, obviously not a dog.
Well, and if you listen to the first story, they don't say how it ran off. They just said it dashed off into the woods. They don't ever say I saw it on two legs or four. I'm assuming it was on all four, or they would have stated it ran off on two legs.
Right. That's what I would assume.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Still creepy as hell.
Yeah. Based on what you're going to be talking about today, check out this story. It says November 26th, 1993.
Wait, what? November 26th of 93?
Yeah.
On Daddy's birthday.
It's your birthday, Brad.
That's right.
It says, my family and I spent Thanksgiving with my wife's mother, Lynn Huff, in Massanutten, Virginia.
Where's that?
Massanutten, Virginia. It says there's a ski resort located in the Blue Ridge Mountains near Harrisonburg.
Ooh.
I discovered while there a past history of alien abductions in that community. One of which resulted in the death of my wife's brother, Bobby, in 1980 by doctors administering a tranquilizer following his Travis Walton-type abduction. He had a fatal allergic reaction to the drug. Ironically, Lynn lives on Hopkins Lane. I was preoccupied with going to Skytop Overlook at the top of the ridge overlooking the ski resort and valley to the east. I wanted to go there around 8 p.m. and look for unusual lights in the sky. My wife, Pat, wanted to come along. We drove our van up the switchback road to the parking lot near the top of the ridge and parked at the opposite end of the parking lot from the entrance, looking out over the beautiful valley below. There was one vehicle parked there. I set up my camera and tripod in front of the van near the guardrail. A security patrol car, which was a Chevy Caprice, arrived shortly after we arrived and then returned back down to the valley. The vehicle that was there when we arrived soon left also. I took a 2-minute exposure of the lights in the valley. The time was exactly 8:18 p.m. Shortly after that, around 8:28 p.m., a brilliant pair of lights entered the parking lot from the road that comes up the side of the mountain. At first, the lights were diagonally behind the van. I recall hearing some sort of humming sound, but no car engine sound. I thought, not another interruption. But this pair of lights illuminated the treetops next to the guardrail to my left, then illuminated the tree trunks, then the tree bases and the guardrail. I turned to look at these lights. I felt a sharp pain in my left eye and quickly turned away because the lights were about 10 times the brightness of high beams on a car. I felt heat radiating from the lights through the window of the van. I saw two lights about 5 feet in diameter with auras of yellow and amber and diffuse rings around the white centers. I also saw a dark dome behind the lights. After turning away, I had the thought in my head, don't look at the lights, look straight ahead. When I tried to turn again, I had great difficulty, as if I was paralyzed. I could only move my head slightly, although my eyes could move freely. My wife tried to turn to look at the light on the right side of the van, but also had difficulty in turning. It was bright enough that the light lit up the ground next to the van, catching her attention. She remembers the reflection of the light moving downwards towards the ground, i.e. getting brighter. She also remembers trying to look at her wristwatch. She recalls having difficulty in turning her wrist so that she could look at her watch. When she could, the watch on her right wrist, it read 8:35 p.m. The next thing she remembered was being able to turn freely to the left to look out the left side window of the van. She saw a small vehicle moving out of the parking lot towards the road that goes back down the mountain. It was sleek and metallic colored and had unusual curves to its silhouette with a dome. The top of it was made of a dark reflective-like material, like tinted glass, below which a tall skirt of metallic shiny gray metal completed the base of the dome. It had a low back and had a downward sagging shape to it, with a ring of small white lights that seemed to merge together. Bordered above and below by dark metal ridges and possibly two small red lights, within the row of white lights, one at either side of the craft may have flashed briefly, as do brake lights. The row of lights separated the dome and the metal base that was angled inwards on both sides, like an old cast iron cooking skillet, and colored a darker metallic shiny gray than the dome. The front pair of bright lights appeared to be directed straight ahead and away from us, not downwards as the craft pulled out of the parking lot. The beams of light widened with distance in front of the craft and appeared to move horizontally, not downwards, with the downward slope of the road, as if it were floating above the ground. There was at least 1 foot gap between the base of the craft and the crest of the road pavement before the road sloped downwards at the parking lot entrance. There were no apparent wheels visible underneath this craft. Pat thought it was a small car pulling out of the parking lot, but now thinks that this was a mental thought purposely given to confuse and distract her from recognize that it was not. As this vehicle departed, my watch beeped, indicating that it was 9 p.m. After the lights entered the parking lot and I turned and glanced at them, they descended and dimmed to a brown amber color, then went out as the vehicle moved down towards the guardrail about 15 to 20 feet from the left side of the van and touched down. I saw the lights move forward in the side view mirror, but could not turn my head for a better look as I had just done before. There was no sound coming from the craft. Then I heard the distinctive sound of gravel being moved as if something hard were pushing the gravel. A gravel apron of about 10 feet in width occurs between the guardrail and the pavement. Upon returning Sunday morning after the storm on Saturday, I found ridges of gravel aligned parallel with the guardrail near the pavement. One prominent ridge was about half an inch high and about 3 foot long. Another shorter and lower ridges occurred inside it as if whatever landed skipped and then dug in. The ridges were too sharp and high to be caused by tires, and the area in front of the ridges had been planed flat. Soon after I heard the gravel move, I heard the door open and then felt something hit the back of my neck, hard, like a blow to the head. The next thing I know, I was waking up from what seemed like a shallow sleep, almost as if I had just dozed off. Then I heard my watch beep. It is said to beep every hour on the hour. I thought it strange because it seemed as though we had just taken a 2-minute time exposure at 8:18 p.m. I commented to my wife that it was 9 p.m. and that we should be leaving. She responded, "Yes, I'm for that." When I looked at my watch, it read 9:54 p.m. And yet it seemed as though I had just heard the beep. Soon after, we both seemed alert and commented to each other about how the past hour went so quickly. I asked my wife if she remembered the last half hour, and she said, "No." Then I began remembering what had just transpired just before I blacked out. I had lost about 30 minutes and could not recall anything that had happened during the period of missing time. My wife had lost about 25 minutes from the time she was able to glance at her wristwatch. The next morning, my wife noticed a brown area about 2 inches wide on the left back of my neck where I had been hit, and commented that the intense light may have caused a tan on the left side of my face where it was redder. I looked at it in the mirror and saw a yellow rim around the browned area and recognized it as a large bruise, similar to but a larger one that I had gotten before when shot with some sort of energy-like beam near Pine Bush in 1992. I checked my wife, but could find no similar mark on her. Later, Pat noticed a small puncture mark on the side inside bend of her arm near one of her veins, but not on it. The mark clearly did not intersect any visible vein, but seemed to go directly into the space next to a tendon. The mark like that was made by a needle, and a thin trail of dark blood was still visible within the needle path. She had gotten no shots recently that she could remember. The difficulty with her moving her arm back to look at her wristwatch may have been her resisting someone holding and turning her arm to give her a tranquilizer or to take a blood sample, or who knows. Pat thinks that the thought of looking at her wristwatch and seeing that it was 8:35 p.m. may have been put in her mind as a way to cover for what really happened to her arm. I went back to the parking lot at the overlook and measured distances, calculating that the craft had to be narrower than 30 feet in order to enter the parking lot from the road, and it had to be able to maneuver sideways within the parking lot, which was about 45 to 50 feet at the widest point. I estimate that the craft was about 20 feet wide at its base and 10 to 15 feet tall. I cannot recall how high off the ground it was when I saw the egg-shaped dome behind the lights. It apparently did not have legs, otherwise it would not have made the slightly curved ridges in the gravel. There were no pod marks in the gravel. I may have photographed similar type craft in Pine Bush. Some of those craft, particularly the Scout craft, have two headlights mounted on either side of a triangular-shaped body with a relatively flat bottom and dome-shaped area on top for the pilot. Estimates of the widths of the outer lights for the three craft, based on photographs of the lights near trees or in front of the moon, have similar values between 15 and 20 feet. The light that Pat saw on the right side of the van appeared to be coming from above and from behind the van, not to the left side of the van where the craft we saw was positioned. It is difficult for us to understand how the light from that craft could have been so bright on the right side and lit up the ground, because the van should have been blocking it. The one possibility is, if we were abducted, is that another craft was hovering above us, and the smaller craft was used as a diversion and or for two aliens to immobilize and sedate us. The small craft appeared too small to be the abduction craft, implying that there must have been a second larger ship very near and directly above us. At first, I doubted that either my wife or I had been abducted. The amount of missing time seemed too short. However, Pat found a needle tract with blood in her rear near the vein at her elbow, and discovered that evening when she got undressed that her panties were torn at the waistband. I was knocked out. Pat wasn't, but she remembers little of what transpired after I lost consciousness. I suspected that they were investigating me because of an implant in me that triggered one of the security detectors. That would explain why they seem to know when I arrive in Pine Bush and are able to find me in other areas, and frequently come out to entertain me with maneuvers for my camera. I don't think that my desire to look for UFOs at the Skytop Overlook was incidental or accidental. On the 29th of May, 1995, Pat and I were hypnotically regressed by Fred Max, a certified hypnotherapist who has also regressed Betty Andresen, Luca of the Andresen Affair. We discovered that Pat had been abducted by bird-like aliens who were very short and had faces that resembled the faces of an owl. She was taken or floated to the small shuttlecraft and that had landed next to the side of our van, and then lifted in that shuttle up to a much larger circular craft hovering above the van. The owl-like aliens did a standard gynecological examination on Pat and removed ova from her ovary. They also shined various color lights into her eyes and recorded the emotional responses. I saw her being floated back down into her seat while I was being attended to in my seat by other owl-like aliens. My brain implants were accessed by a probe which entered my skull just below my ear canals. I was not taken aboard the craft. Several days later, the red points of probe entry were still oozing blood serum. On the 11th of December 1993, Pat, Niles, Robin, and I went to the winter solstice party being held at Ralph Fucciatola's and Kathy Green's house in Morristown, New Jersey. A guy, Mr. Rourke, known as Kilo Kilo, on the Big Island in Hawaii, were present as guests of David Hartman, a wellness counselor, promotional agent from Madison, New Jersey. Kilo Kilo gave his story of being abducted at an early age and having an implant behind his right ear discovered and removed by his doctor. Later, he got another implant and had it surgically removed, but before they could photograph it, it was self-destructed into gas and stained with a bubbling reaction, he said. He was emotionally upset about being victimized without his permission and said that the extraterrestrials asked him and said it was for a higher purpose. He would have to consent to it. When reading communion, he became sick when he got to the part about the implant Whitley Strieber described behind his ear. Kathy and Kilo Kilo and Nancy Weber wanted to view our auras to see if there was anything unusual. The room was darkened somewhat, and Pat and I sat against a white wall. Viewed from across the room, both Kilo Kilo and Nancy noticed exceptional auroral development in colors around both of us, blues and greens. Kilo Kilo said he had never seen such a pronounced aura of anyone. They both noticed and described an elongated cone-shaped distortion to our auras in the same places, originating from just below our right ears and extending upwards and outwards as a disjunction or disturbance in our auras. They concluded that something physical within us was causing this interference, suggesting that it might be due to an implant. We could feel no implant in on the outside of our skulls, but there could be something inside, I suppose. There was no initial indications of recent or past scars at the places where the disturbance originated on either of us either. But later, a tiny blood scab appeared just to the left side of my ear canal and continued to reappear after I removed the earlier ones. I don't know what happened to us, but I believe we were abducted. Bruce Cornett. So that's a very crazy and lengthy story.
Wow.
But it just goes to show, I like how they can paralyze you, but not 100%. Some people it works on, some people it doesn't. And then they implant or imprint these false memories to where you think it's something else, or you forget about it entirely. And it's only if you go to like a hypno therapist and are put under hypnotic regression that you start to realize, oh no, that's not what really happened. That wasn't really an owl. That wasn't really, I wasn't really doing this. Something was going on, and it's terrifying. When it comes to the Andresen affair, we actually interviewed them years ago. So if you go back, man, it must have been like 2014, 2015. We spoke to the Andresen. So that was very cool. I like alien abductions. I know you're going to be getting into some more. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
All right, y'all, let's kick the tires and light the fires.
Oh, yeah.
To this little jewel here. If real quick, to most of you, if I bring up, this may be one of those stories or questions that a lot of you won't think of, because as I don't always think about this, but when you start a story about back on a September night in 1961, well, a lot of you won't think of anything other like, okay, September night, 1961, but that's something that sticks in the mind of a lot of diehard ufologists. That's the evening that Betty and Barney Hill were abducted from a little dark country road there in New Hampshire's White Mountains. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of this abduction because we've covered it all before. Kyle did a great job covering it before. But there's one part that I would like to go back over, and that part is this. This is one of those things that's very unsettling, and it's that once on this craft or inside this craft, the Hills were separated. They weren't kept together, taken apart, and they were taken to an examination room, and they talk about what the examination room looks like and that there was metal tables and that the table was short. And I remember Barney was talking about how his legs had actually hung over the side of the table and all this. But the strange thing was going on that they both reported that while they were being examined, that these creatures, these beings were taking hair, taking nail clippings, were scraping on their skin, and that each of these samples looked like they were placed on glass slides. And there was also needles that they reported that had long wires connected to them. and that they were probing their arms and legs and their heads and even into their spines. And then they said that one, and Betty reported this, was around 4 to 6 inches long, and it was inserted into her belly. And it was like a pregnancy test, if you will, that was injected into her. And both Betty and Barney said this being that they thought was the captain of the ship seemed to stand over to the side and watch all this going on. And as if the idea of an abduction isn't terrifying enough already, now as a woman, you have to worry about being sexually assaulted by these aliens. All right, male, and but not only that, but now a woman has to worry about being sexually assaulted by an alien, impregnated, and then dropped off only to be abducted again at a later date and have said child removed from you. So no matter your stance on this alien abduction theory, you can't deny the unsettling subject matter. It doesn't matter if you believe it or not, the whole idea behind it and the whole thing of the way these women discuss what's happened to them, whether it's real or not, it's affected these women extremely traumatically. So I'm going to discuss a couple of these events, these accounts of some strange, it has to do with the whole pregnancy thing that, and I don't even really know where to go with it. It's one of those confusing subject matters. So we're just going to jump right in. Now, this one was, I found from an email that was actually sent to me, but it comes from, not from this woman. It was a listener had sent this to me to a link to several other spots online. But this was a story from Iowa that happened to a woman named Nicole back in 2010. And Nicole wrote this down, and this is her account. I'm going to share this with you. It says, I'm nervous to even say anything, and I don't want to appear psychotic. I'm a practical, rational person in society. In school, I'm an A student. And last year, actually, I didn't write down the dates, but I'm sure it happened in September. So this is, you know, that she's talking about September of 2010. That she says, the weather was nice and warm. And one day, while I was playing outside with my son, the wind started to blow. It was warm, and it blew these beautiful orange leaves from the trees. It was almost magical. The sky was not clear, but there was no sign of rain. And later that night in bed, I had an experience that was almost dreamlike. There were beings, and they told me that I was pregnant, and that no one would notice. And they told me they would be back, and I just shrugged this off as a dream. 3 days later, I had another experience. I gave birth to aliens, three, and all different. One I can remember specifically. It looked like a typical alien, pale green and big eyes. It was really cute. It was telepathic, and its fingertips would glow as well as its mouth, maybe signaling that it was hungry, because that is what it was telling me. I remember a larger alien coming and taking the infant aliens, one I was not fond of. It was hairy and sort of mean, and each time these dreams happened, I was in my room. Nothing was out of place, and nothing changed like in a regular dream. The only thing that resembled a dream was the fogginess. I went back to sleep in my dream, if you will, experience. About a month later, I had another dream. This time, I was brought onto a very large spaceship. These aliens that I spoke to were serious, intelligent, and appeared to be working with human people that appeared to be military. They gave me the option to stay or go, and I chose to stay. I was given an injection and led to what seemed like a medical ward, and there I fell asleep. When I awoke, I was fully pregnant again. I was surrounded by other girls who seemed to be participants in what was going on, and they too were pregnant. Some were giving birth, and some were in straitjackets and screaming. It was almost disturbing. So I left the room. I was put into another room where I was to give birth. This time I gave birth to twin girls, human. The difference with them was that they were extremely intelligent and their growth was rapid. I was placed in another room where I was alone, and then a doctor came in to tell me that one of the girls had an infection. I got to see her once, and then they told me I had to leave. The environment did not change, as a regular dream does, and I even slept. I'm just concerned about this because I don't dream like this. I think they've been coming to me lately because yesterday morning I woke up and I felt drugged and drunk, but I could talk normally. I don't do drugs. I don't even drink. I've had experiences like this since I was small. My mom has even had an experience, and I was with her. Now, I do believe in aliens because the idea of us being the most intelligent beings in the universe that can be described as infinity seems ignorant. I have one more experience that happened when I was a teen. I was lying in bed with my boyfriend, and these beings came and held something over my abdomen that had a red light. And it was warm. I was begging them to stop and to not take what they said they were taking, my baby. If I was actually pregnant and this really happened, if this was not a dream, I was not very far along. Now, this may seem stupid, but this is what happened when I awoke. It was as if I was never asleep. My abdomen was warm and I was laying belly up with no blankets. And I even started my cycle that day. Those are my experiences. Nicole. So, what do you think, Philly?
Man.
So she's not saying that she remembers the abduction, okay?
Uh-huh.
She's saying she had what felt like a dream, but it really wasn't a dream. It was the fogginess of a dream, but she felt like she was wide awake. Now, this could easily be the ramblings of a mad woman, right? I mean, yeah, easily
absolutely.
Being.
Absolutely.
We always say that, but that's also the first thing that we always turn to. As far as the human race, as people always turn to, because if any of this, if part of this is real, it's extremely unsettling and extremely unnerving, and you don't want to think about it. But why do we get these encounters? I'd like to talk to Nick about this too, but why do we get these encounters where you have the reports like Betty and Barney Hill had talked about, and many people have talked about, where you see what looks like not just beings on the spaceship, but also military personnel on the spaceship with them. So it's like we've discussed many times in the past. Are these beings working in conjunction with the world military or the world government? Or are they actually just human beings that are dressed like that to make
mm-hmm.
you? But no matter what, something about these pregnancies seem to be like they become pregnant very quick. The gestation is extremely short. And they are extremely fast in their growth cycle. And yeah. then the baby's taken.
Right.
And it's like something, it's not like a normal 9 month gestation for a human. It's almost like it all happens in just a matter of weeks, like boom, boom. Or like they take it till it actually becomes an embryo, or like it actually starts becoming the baby. And then they pull that out and put it in something else in a sack, like they grew that sheep in or whatnot. And then that's where they want to grow the baby.
Exactly.
You know, it seems. I don't know. It's very unnerving for the idea that you could come, like you come take a man. The worst thing is like, oh, we're going to probe your butt. Yeah, that's pretty awful, but you're not going to leave me with a child growing in my butt. You know, it's not going to, but for a woman.
Yeah. And
you're violating what motherly instinct she has. I mean, she's a breeding program now.
Right. Yeah. And what's also equally disturbing is there's several accounts of these abductees that claim that there were human beings on board. Now, I'm not talking about people that were taken. I'm talking about there were like military men,
like
generals in their fatigues, yes. in their outfits. Even the Betty and Barney Hill case, like you brought up in the beginning, he talks about, he believed that the guy was a ginger, a guy was a red haired.
Yeah.
He said he looked like he was Irish. Maybe was even overheard him speaking an Irish accent. It makes you wonder, is it even extraterrestrial? Because I know when we had, Christopher Garantano about the Montauk Chronicles, he was talking to one of the people. And the guy was under some drugs that they had administered to him. And he said that there was a guy dressed as an alien, but he knew it wasn't an alien. They were trying to make him believe it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm with you. Maybe there is some kind of sinister testing going on. And the only way they can do it. Oh, man, I don't know.
But if you were my
what
thing
would be
is
the goal,
this.
I guess. What's the reason?
But I go further back than that. What's the reason of dressing up like an alien? Why even let him wake up? Just wear regular masks. Just wear regular, like, gas masks or creepy. Why spin this whole alien agenda on them this entire time?
I'm with you.
I guess because it makes you sound even crazier when you discuss this, but it still doesn't change the fact for the fast gestation. Like, the, you know what I mean? It doesn't change the fact that how quickly these women can become pregnant and how fast these babies can grow and how fast they're harvested. Here's another one from a woman named Delilah. And she was a woman from Puerto Rico.
Isn't she that chick that has that radio show?
The Nightbird? Delilah. Yeah. I don't think it's this. It's not that Delilah. Lon had posted this one up, and this one was the one that really got my curiosity up before I found the Nicole story, is because Delilah, she's married. She's got two other kids, the whole thing. And she tells this story that she says that she was abducted and was impregnated by an extraterrestrial and then gave birth to what she says a half human, half extraterrestrial. She says, one day during the month of October, a friend and I were at a yoga center. In this place, various yoga activities are celebrated, and also people go there to meditate. It was 7:30 p.m. when my friend and I decided to retire and go to sleep. Then all of a sudden, somebody put their hand on my face. I couldn't see who it was because the room was dark. So suddenly I was suspended in the air, flying towards a direction that was totally unknown to me. While I was being transported in the air, I could see below myself houses and trees. At that moment, I was so scared that I couldn't move, I couldn't speak, nor could I scream. I calculate that the time had elapsed while I was being transported was approximately from 7:30 p.m. to 5 a.m. I was in my room when I woke up at 5 a.m. I immediately started vomiting, and all my body was in terrible pain. After a while, I felt a little better, and I went to talk to Swami, who is the director of the yoga center. I told him how terrible I felt and what had happened to me. He told me to go back to my room and sleep until about lunch, and that when I woke up, I would feel much better. Which happened. After this, I was left with a strange sensation, which is difficult to explain. One of the sensations was in my genital region. The other was in my mind, my way of thinking. Before, I didn't give too much importance to the simple things that surrounded me. And now, all of a sudden, I began to notice how beautiful the sky was and also feeling a great amount of love towards other people. So in other words, my life had changed completely. Time passed by, and it was already December, 3 months after my extraordinary experience. During these 3 months, I had noticed that my cycle occurred every 50 days, not every 27 days or so, as would normally happen. Also, my stomach had enlarged just a little. Time passed by, and then I had another encounter with a UFO. Suddenly, I found myself in a metallic room where there were 12 small men, not human, all dressed in gray. In this room, I was lying in a metallic bed where I can clearly remember giving birth to a child, just like a normal birth to this child, because my two other children had been born by cesarean. Then suddenly, I fell asleep. When I woke up, I saw one of the extraterrestrials with this child in his arms. When I saw this child, something deep inside of me told me he was my child, but I also remember being afraid. I remember telling one of the extraterrestrials that I considered this child strange because he was half human and half extraterrestrial. Also, I can remember telling myself that even though this child was strange, I had to accept and love him because he was my child. Also, the way he looked at me and the expression on his face confirmed this to me. After a moment, the extraterrestrial brought the child to me so that I could hold him. Even though I know he belongs to me, I cannot have him. And because of this, my pain and sorrow cannot go away. They told me that he could not live with me because he could not eat the food that we human beings eat. While I held him in my arms, I didn't want to let him go. I held him very tight. Then the extraterrestrials took him away from me and escorted me to the entrance of the flying saucer. After these two experiences, I've had two more. The other two occurred when they brought me the child so that I could be with him. They do so by transporting me by air, holding the child in my arms. While I'm being transported, I have noticed that they make like a certain experiment with me. I remember feeling fear, like if the child would just fall right out of my arms. I suppose that they do this to see how mother humans act or their instincts are towards their children. At the present, my two children have also had UFO experiences. They both have developed a certain kind of mental ability and presently are being studied by them. I can't help worrying that probably one of these days my children can also be abducted. Now, this comes from the Puerto Rican research group down in Puerto Rico for these UFO experiences by Delilah. Now, I tell you all that because the sorrow part that she brings up, that's the thing that I think we have to remember the most of is, like you had said, it affects these people.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things that whether or not it's true, whether or not she was really abducted, whether or not she was abducted, yes, but whether or not she had a baby, who right. knows? But it's affecting her like it's happened. She believes it happened.
Which must be devastating.
It's just as bad as if it really did happen. If you believe it wholeheartedly and you cannot shake that, well, then
it might as well have happened.
It might as well have happened.
Exactly.
She's affected by this whole thing. We already know that the loss of a child affects people dramatically, that it's probably the worst thing you could go through is losing a child. I can't imagine being a mother and giving birth to this child and then having it ripped away from you and you just taken back and dropped off and like, thanks.
Right.
You know, that's it. So I don't know. These are, and like I said, there's more, there's a bunch of them. I'm going to have to get into some more. And there's some of them that's not even about a pregnancy. There's some of them to where the baby looks like more alien. Like they see, you know, like we've talked about this with black eyed kids, where they see these kids and they're like, these kids must be hybrids. They're not real humans. Maybe they're, you know, alien human hybrids. People see these certain babies where they say the same thing, where you can tell that they're not. I know you don't know. And it's yeah, just no, one of those strange stories. Like I guess because it's one of those things I had done a long time ago, the alien abductions where they found people, human mutilations.
Right.
And this is one of those disturbing things, too, is I can't imagine, like I said, a woman being abducted and being assaulted and then being used for a breeder program by these aliens. It just, that to me, sounds like the worst thing that could happen for alien abduction. Like, I understand they want to just take you and maybe study and look you over, but now you're going to turn them into something like that. It just sounds awful. So there's some more disturbing ones, and then
the whole
thing's disturbing.
The whole thing of alien abduction is disturbing enough, but then let's just take a break. We'll get into it.
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All of mine shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
And there we go, y'all. Some crazy, more unsettling abduction stories. What is the, I don't know, I'm torn between a couple of things as far as unsettling ideas with alien abductions. What you pointed out before the start of the show when we said that, you know, that they can put you asleep, basically subdue you, but not 100%.
Yeah, right? It doesn't like work on everybody. Awake, like but, most people it works, but some it's like it doesn't.
I don't know if that's more disturbing or the fact that they can implant false memories.
And actually place implants in you too.
Yes, but the false memory thing, because it's just the idea of like all the movies we watched in the 80s and even earlier where they're messing with your brain, you think about Total Recall, all this stuff. It was always just laughable. But the fact that something could do something like that is the most unsettling of all.
Yeah.
Because they could steal you from you.
Yeah.
They could implant a whole new personality, everything into you where you would have no idea that you were like, that's not the same guy.
Well, that's what makes alien abduction probably the scariest for me, especially as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
It's because like you say, always joke about like, if you don't want to see Bigfoot, don't go in the woods. Like it's real easy to avoid. But to think that something can come into your bedroom at night without your permission and just do whatever the heck it wants to. Well, it's terrifying. And I've met people that have had strange things happen to them. And I would be the same if I were them. They don't want to be put under hypnosis. They don't want to know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to know either.
I think it would be better if I didn't, right?
You know, it's strange though. In a lot of stories, people are, they're paralyzed. They think they don't remember. They have false imprints put into their brain, but they know something's going on. They go and get it, and they go to a hypnotherapist. They reveal what really happened. And it's like after they know they've been abducted, it's like now it's harder to be put under by the aliens. Like now being paralyzed doesn't work like it used to because you're like you're consciously aware of what's happening.
Just like when people just can't be hypnotized, it's just that whole thing.
And again, they usually start picking on you when you're a child.
Yeah, and it runs in the family.
Right. Yeah, for whatever reason. And it might be that reason because say they abduct you as a kid and they shoot you up with some kind of serum or they take something from you, then they want to see how that works genetically. We would do the same thing if we were experimenting on animals, you know.
So let me ask you this. Do you feel left out or upset that you don't get abducted, that you're not special enough to be taken? Part of you kind of does, don't it?
Well, sometimes I think I may have been abducted, but then I try not to think about it too much because it's frightening. I don't know. It's an interesting subject.
It is an extremely interesting subject. Speaking of, if you've watched any of the new Unsolved Mysteries, they've also got the cattle mutilations on there.
I did watch that.
So you saw Christopher on there.
I did.
Which is great, right? So if y'all haven't
seen it. Another person we've spoken to.
Dude, at length, and we had him on about his book years back.
Yeah, A Strange Harvest, I think it was called.
Stalking the Herd.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And the other one was A Strange Harvest, right?
If y'all want to really get into it, read Christopher's books. We may have to have him jump back on.
Why does this keep going?
Professionalism at its finest, folks.
I apologize. I thought I had everything on silent. This happens all the time. No joke. No one has talked to me in my family. I haven't spoken to anybody in my family in the entire day. The moment I get to Skeleton Studios and start recording, everybody starts calling and texting me.
He's not joking about this. This happens every time, and he gets so, he leaves here so mad when he goes, because he's like, I tell y'all every time where I'm going, stop.
Well, the pop-up called a couple weeks ago, remember?
Yep.
And you can't tell how many times I've just completely edited the part where the phone call interrupts the show out. But it is, it's like, it's weird how they, yeah. just the universe.
They know we're doing it.
Man.
But it, so yeah, if y'all are down with the cattle mutilations and want to learn more, but we may need to talk to Chris again.
That would be cool.
Because that is an extremely fascinating topic as well.
Yeah. The one of the first persons to document all that.
All the crazy mutilations.
Linda Moulton-Howe. We got to meet her at the Ozark UFO conference.
Yeah.
I spoke to her a little bit about it, but I've always been interested in that because there was a rancher. Obviously, we're in Texas, so there's a lot of ranchers around here. But there was more than one rancher in our county that had cattle go missing and found some mutilated.
Yeah, and I think there's still some that goes on around here now. We just don't hear quite as much of it. But, I mean, back then, what was that? That was in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s when that was going down.
And what's interesting is, you know, kind of like Bigfoot, where one week I feel this way, then the other week I feel different. I'm the same way with cattle mutilation. The reason I say that is it doesn't make a lot of sense. There's like a couple different theories, right? It's Satanists doing stuff. But why would they be using lasers and doing precise cuts, right? If you're a Satanist, you wouldn't.
And how do you not leave tracks? I don't care who you worship.
If they're If they're aliens, why do they bring the cows back? Just take them with you. And if it's the government, like say, well, the military's testing out stuff, the government can't raise their own cattle? Like, why do they need to steal a rancher's cow?
You know what it is, right?
No.
It's the giant birds. It's the thunderbirds. They just pick them up and eat them and then just drop them.
And they have lasers.
They have lasers that drain blood. Eyes.
Right? They suck all the blood out. I don't know. It's just
giant.
It's one of those things that's it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm going to hit you with something that's unsettling and doesn't make a lot of sense.
Go for it. You ready for this one?
They're in Greene County, Pennsylvania. How many times do we talk about how crazy of a place Pennsylvania is? Pennsylvania is wacky, y'all. If y'all live there, dude, it's y'all have weird things go down on the reg. This is one of them. Kyle loves Dog Man. We love talking about, everybody loves to BS about Dog Man. Now's the perfect time. It's almost Halloween. We're getting ready for Dog Man. This isn't Dog Man, y'all. I'm hitting you with Dog Woman.
That's Dog right. Woman. Okay.
Three upright female cryptid canines encountered in Greene County, Pennsylvania. Says, I had a run-in with dog women when I was 15 years old. I'm 29 now, so I want to place the year 2011. This took place in Rogersville, Pennsylvania, Greene County. We lived in a double-wide that my parents had converted into a little cozy home, complete with a basement. The only neighbors we had at the time were the high school, which was literally walking distance down the road, and a farmer further on the other end of the road. We lived in a pretty rural area for most of our lives. Behind our house was thick, dense woods. In front of our house was a big yard with a pampas grass bush down by the driveway. And to the side of our house was an open field with lush green grass and an apple tree. There was also a creek and a stone bridge that was attached to our driveway. This was in the middle of winter. We were right in the middle of Christmas break from school. Christmas was literally just days away. My mom worked overnight as an LPN and Dad worked overnight as a fuel truck dispatcher, so my brother Zach Wyatt and I had the whole house to ourselves for the evening. I was in the living room watching Larva on my laptop on a TV tray in front of our living room recliner, feeling a little tired. I had just worked my tail off at a weightlifting practice and had just gotten home. My brother, Zach, was lying on the couch. He had a rerun of Lost tapes on the big screen TV in our living room. He's been big into paranormal since we were little kids. All around him, he was having an absolute junk food buffet. On either hand, we were both halves of a huge meatball hoagie from the convenience store in town. Two more hoagies on the coffee table in front of him. He was 250 pounds and in a heavyweight class in wrestling, so he was allowed to indulge a little bit. I was at 170 pounds and had to work my butt off to keep my lean, mean athletic physique. Wyatt was in his room playing Kirby Mass Attack on Nintendo DS. He didn't do any sports. So he was usually home before us or was at play practice. He was a big theater kid. Halfway through my episode of Larva, my brother Zach lets out the biggest gasp of excitement. He just gets this big smile on his face, sits up on the couch, and starts getting giddy. I ask him what's got him so excited, and he just points at the living room window without saying a further word. I turned around in the recliner to see what he was looking at, and my eyes felt like they were about to bulge out Looney Tunes style. Standing on our porch was just a beast of a dog woman with her face smashed up against the window. I've watched enough Monster Quest and other paranormal shows with my brother Zach to know what every cryptid is supposed to look like by heart at this point. Her hot breath fogged up the window.
And they weren't scared? They just thought this was funny?
Doesn't sound like it.
I don't think I would think it's funny at all. I'd be like, what in the hell?
I don't know.
Is
teenage
that?
You might have been like, what's going on over here?
No, I was still a coward then.
Also got to think, too, this was, they said 2011. Right, so they've seen that. Who knows? Maybe they think somebody's messing around.
Maybe I'm just a big coward. I would be scared.
I would be a little upset too. Listen, says her bright blue eyes locked right on the junk food buffet Zach had going on. Her legs were super muscular. Imagine the big, muscly legs and quads of those female bodybuilders, and then double that. Her biceps even had biceps. Very big chested, large breast, super strong looking stomach. It might have been 7 to 8 feet tall. Her head was scraping on our porch awning. She had to kneel down a good bit. She had silvery gray, bushy fur like a coyote. Her eyes were blue, though. I'm just sitting there on the verge of a full breakdown at what's happening, my heart beating wildly in my chest, about to just bust out with how fast it's beating. Zach asked if it wanted a snack, even shaking both halves of the meatball hoagie in the air a little bit. And to my surprise, this beast let out a begging sound and actually gave puppy dog eyes.
Come on.
Like a dog does when it sees you eat dinner. Hold on. He gets up, grabs the other hoagies. They were pepperoni pizza subs. Runs to the kitchen to grab some of the massive mounds of packs of hot dogs from our fridge. There was a big sale on them. Mom and Dad had gone hunting crazy and brought a bunch for some reason even that week. Says we didn't even eat them all up before they could go bad. I look at him like he's out of his mind because I know what he is not about to go out there. I get up to following. I keep yelling and yelling at him not to do what I think he's about to do. Now, all of this commotion lured Wyatt out of his room. He's asking what the hell's going on. He quickly put two and two together and tried to help me keep Zach from bull rushing the door, fearing nothing at the moment, I guess, like any sane person should. But sadly, he outweighed both of us, and Wyatt, not being much bigger than me, easily barreled past us and onto the porch wearing nothing but Star Wars t-shirt, pajamas, and a pair of slippers. We huddled up against the living room window, fully prepared to watch our beloved brother be mauled by a monster before our eyes and us not be able to stop it. But to our surprise, it never happened. He just kept going. Dalton, Wyatt, this is the best day ever. You ready? You're going to love this. As he was feeding this thing hot dogs from one of the packs of hot dogs, it just catches them in the air with its mouth like a dog.
No, that.
Me and Wyatt both yelled at him to get back in the house. To our horror and Zach's excitement, two more dog women emerged from either side of the house and came up to the porch begging for a snack. They were smaller than the first one, only coming up to the first one's shoulders. These two were also very big-chested. This one was plump and some very muscular, powerful legs, but nothing like the first one had. The other one was on the slim or very lean side. They had grayish-brown fur with reddish tinges behind the ears and around the face. They, however, had eyes like a coyote, the yellowish-brown. Now, we're really pounding on the window at this point, yelling at him to come back inside, but Zach's just out there having a great time. The first one had eaten all three subs in nearly a single bite, so he's down to tossing hot dogs. They were getting pretty antsy also. They kept making those weird screams you hear him make in online videos at him. Oh, yeah. Gets better. They were letting him pet them, okay. But I can't stress enough, my brother was literally inches from death. They were making these unholy sounds, growling and snapping in the air at each other when there was too many hot dogs. Zach's hand nearly got snapped a time or two for this. They even pawed at the air in front of his face to get his attention when he focused on one for too long, almost slashing its face to shreds if they would have pawed closer. Zach didn't mind. He was having a great time. Eventually, the loud roar of a snowplow truck coming down the road, plowing snow, scared them off, and it was a good thing too. Zach was nearly out of hot dogs. The three of them took off into a field as fast as the wind. We couldn't keep track of them. They were so fast. They were like blurs. Now it says, Wyatt and I gave Zach a good brotherly whipping when he got back inside. Thanks.
Okay. Look, from time to time, you're going to get these stories. And... this is absolutely not a real story.
Look,
it can't be. I'm willing to entertain some wild stuff on this
right?
show. I mean, wild stuff. This is obviously made up. It's Halloween. Halloween's upon us. Somebody sent this in as a goof to see if we would read it or wear it.
Well, it's also one of those things like this. We've always talked about it, and it still feels that way. Sometimes when you have so much detail...
Yeah.
When that's going on, when something that stressful is going down, I tend not to believe it as much.
Absolutely. If it was the same story leading up to the point where they saw something on the porch, they looked out, it was a dog woman, and they were horrified. And they hid in the closet, turned off all the lights, pretended like no one was home, and the thing walked off. That might be a believable story. But the three of them
and
horsing
the
around,
feeding
it sub sandwiches
and
hot dogs and petting it. I mean, come on, man.
I think everybody listening knows for a fact, right? Like, they don't operate that way.
If it's even real, they definitely wouldn't act like dogs.
Yeah, they don't. Just because it's a dog creature, dog woman, dog man, they don't act like dogs.
Look, I believe that there are sightings of dog men, but I believe it's like some demonic manifestation of something. It's not literally
physical,
like a pet dog.
That's kind of my feeling, too. So anyway, there you go.
Great story. Great, great story. If you have any really cool stories that are absolutely real and
here
you want
we
to
go.
Send them to us, you can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. Cam, what do you got coming up?
I don't know. I know I don't like the fact that it got warmer. And it's going to be warmer. I've lost the cool stuff, but I think I'm going to be doing a lot of fiddling around the house, getting stuff ready for us to take our trip.
That's right. We're going out of town soon. And also, speaking of Cattle Mutes and Unsolved Mysteries, Long is going to be on the show this week. So I'll be looking forward to that. We're going to be talking about his appearance on Unsolved Mysteries. We're going to be talking about the flying humanoid wave that's been going on in Chicago, as well as some other things.
All the stuff. Lon's got it all, man.
Me and Luke are going to watch The Thing. We're taking my wife to see The Thing. She's never seen that movie. So I'm actually looking forward to that.
This is the John Carpenter.
The John Carpenter one. Let's not forget about before we get to our sponsor, while we're on the topic of The Thing, I just wanted to ask you, at the very end of the movie, because there's a lot of camps on this, when it's just MacReady and Childs and they're waiting for the camp to burn down, there's people that say neither one of them are infected. One of them is saying Childs is infected. And I hear the other one that MacReady's infected. And then I also hear that both Childs and MacReady are infected. That's why they're not going after one another. What do you think is happening? The theory that they're both the thing is that they're not fighting. They're just waiting to be frozen again. They're waiting for the next group of people to find them. Or do you not have an opinion?
Well, that's tough because, I mean, you remember how the remake after that one starts.
I saw the newer one, but I don't really remember.
It's good, too. It's good, and it's a lot like that, but they tie them together with the dog, with all of this stuff, you know, and this whole deal. For some reason, I don't know, I guess it's because I'm such a Kurt Russell fan, I don't want to believe that he's got it.
That's me.
Right? I don't think that they do. I feel like they're staying there to make sure nothing leaves.
I've even heard the theory that MacReady's bottle of J&B scotch isn't scotch. It's a Molotov cocktail like he's been throwing, and he gives it to Childs to see if Childs will drink it. And when Childs doesn't have a reaction, then MacReady knows he's not human.
I also have seen that's when MacReady becomes Santa Claus.
Yeah. So to my opinion, I don't know. And I saw an interview, this was years ago, with Kurt Russell and John Carpenter. And John Carpenter won't reveal who is the thing or who isn't. He just says, I don't know.
It may be better that way.
I think it is, right? It's kind of left unknown. Very cool movie.
Dude, I really thoroughly enjoy that film.
I think it stands up. I remember being a kid and it was terrifying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The special effects are amazing.
Oh, dude, I love it. Well, the idea of being secluded like that and something like that happening.
The idea of an alien not being like a gray or something. The alien is like a virus.
Yes.
Is a cool idea.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we always talk about. It's the reason I enjoy 30 Days of Night so much and the vampires in that.
Yeah.
Is that's kind of how I feel. The same as like the Salem Lot vampires.
I haven't seen that new one.
But saying the same thing as the old one.
Yeah.
I like it when they're not lovey. Like, I want my vampires to either be 30 Days of Night or What We Do in the Shadows.
I
don't like the in-between.
Yeah, I don't like where they're, like, stealing the girl and they're like, oh, yeah. Lovey-dovey. And
yeah, I get it. I get that. That's a good romance story. Awesome. No, I don't want
that. It has nothing to do with a vampire movie.
No, I want them to either be just completely just blood-devouring monsters or Laszlo.
I got you. Oh, there's a new season of that coming. I can't wait for
I think it's the last one.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Well, let's not forget about our sponsor. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors, choose the right one for your needs, and click to instantly book an appointment. We're talking about in-network appointments with more than 100,000 healthcare providers across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, from eye care to skin care, and much more. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/expanded. Find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/expanded. I hope everybody has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Kip.
Peace, y'all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for $1. Because saving with deals is always on the menu with new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.